Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio, featuring The Crew. Where a former pro football player and a D3 All-Star use strength and conditioning as an excuse to talk about anything but. Now here's John and Tex.
Welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. Hey Tex, we're going to go back to the hotline. And I think we're going to pull it. Oh, you got to.
That's it. You got to mute the hotline.
That. Is that the hotline?
That's hot. It's hot.
Oh man, I thought that was your Slack annoying the shit out of me.
Slacking off over here.
Yeah. Well, dude, you know, we got this thing called the hotline. I know we haven't revisited it in a hot minute, but if you're interested in sending us a question to the hotline, 929-464-464-0. 929-ing-ing-0. Yeah. If you want to get a hold of us, want to leave a question, anything burning in your mind with deep desire to know, like what kind of hair care products Tex uses.
Maple syrup.
What his favorite penguin is.
The premier penguin.
Yeah,
strength and conditioning. I don't know any other penguin.
Oh, the S&C penguin? You mean not the...
No, I'm going Colin Farrell in the new Batman.
Oh, I like that penguin. Real weird, real short, Danny DeVito-esque. That's how I imagine the penguin being. Just very Danny DeVito-esque, very short.
So
driving a minivan, just old, like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia penguin. That type of penguin is what I'm really looking for. So I say we pull back. We have Charles fire up one of these questions. Let's randomly pick one. And let's see what we come up with one of our listeners, if one of the burning questions they just have to know. So, Charles, cue that bitch.
Hey, Power Athlete. This is Jack. I've got a question for you based off the Brandon Lilly podcast episode. I know, John, you mentioned you're a huge fan of cast iron, and so am I, but, and I don't know if I'm venturing into the weird category of nutrition.
Well, if you got to ask, you probably
I've really are. Moved away from cast iron because most cast iron pans need to be seasoned with flaxseed oil or grapeseed oil or some highly processed industrial seed oil. I know one of the huge rules at Power Athlete is don't be weird, especially with nutrition, but I'm just wondering, have you guys found a suitable replacement to season a cast iron pan that isn't going to make you sick long term? One more question I have, and I don't know if Tex is willing to share this, but how much liver were you eating and how did you cook it? I'm trying to eat some liver myself, and I'm just curious how you're cooking it, that you're able to put down enough to get you toxic. Glad to hear that you're feeling better, but just curious in how that liver journey went from you. Thank you so much, and you guys put out great content. I thought the Brandon Lilly episode was one of your best. Have a great day.
Bye. Man,
where to begin?
A two-parter. Well, first, let's start with the cast iron. How long do you think cast iron pans have been in existence?
I don't know the answer to that.
Let's look it up. Well, Enhanced. It looks like cast iron pans were first used in the Han Dynasty in China around 220 AD. Casting techniques became widespread in Europe in the 16th century. I wonder how they season their pans in 2020 AD in China. Do you think that they were using highly processed seed oils?
No.
No.
Fat.
Do you think in the 16th century in England, they were going out and processing flaxseed for them to season their pans?
I don't even think they knew what a flaxseed was.
No. Jesus. Dude, no, we don't use high processed seed oils. I use either tallow or beef lard. So like a non-crazy person that doesn't subscribe to the internet, I've seasoned it both using lard, animal fat, which is a pretty good one. I've done 500 for an hour, maybe even a little bit longer. I've like preheated the pan. I've done a couple different. We have these bitchin' butter pad pans that I got through the Cowboy Cauldron people. And since I gifted you, because, you know, I went over to your house and you had some really abysmal pans and needed to gift you with some badass cast iron ones. So what I found is I use animal fat. I've used beef tallow or lard for all my casting of pans. I don't use vegetable seed. I don't use grape seed or rape seed or flax seed or any of that, even though I know people do because it's cheap. That's the biggest reason, because it's a cheap way to do it. You spend a couple hundred dollars on a really nice cast iron pan. I'm not fucking using flaxseed oil in it. I'm going to go and get some bitchin' tallow. I'm going to get something from the butcher, and I'm going to do it right like they probably did hundreds, thousands of years ago, not using seed oil. So to squash that one, go find some beef tallow. Go get some lard anywhere you want to do it. You can go and get it at Whole Foods. I guarantee they have lard at Whole Foods.
Is ghee lard?
No, ghee is actually a process or a made from butter.
Oh, so I use ghee.
Use ghee.
Is that a negative?
I don't use butter because it tends to burn pretty easy, whereas the beef tallow and that one gets real, real hot. Mm. So, and when I season pans, I don't season them in the house. That's another big one. So what I did when I seasoned my pan is I put it out on the Cowboy Cauldron, built a monster fire, put it on there. Because if you put in it enough and you do it right, it's going to spit and pop and totally fuck up your kitchen. So I remember one time I preheated the pan thinking I could do that. That was another one I did. But you got to be able to smoke that sucker. And then you just have to be super consistent with using it. I either use coconut oil or I'll use some form of duck fat, and I use a bunch of different stuff. Whenever it's done, I always let it cool down, pour a little water in it, let it sit overnight, let everything get kind of soft, and then I'll take like a bristle-pad brush and I kind of brush everything off, and then I wipe it down, or actually don't wipe it down, put it on the stove wet, turn on the heat, let it heat up. Once it starts to get dry, I'll put oil back in it, wipe it all out with a paper towel, and then I let it sit and it's ready for the next time. And I found that, you know, the first couple times you cook on it, you're going to skunk the pan. The problem is don't go in there and scrub it. You got to like soak it overnight. Just put some water in it. Let everything get broken up. Use a little bit of bristle, or not a bristle paddle, just like one of like the nylon brushes. And you kind of brush them. And then once they look kind of chalky and dry, put it on there, heat it back up, and then put the oil back on it.
Boom. The butter pans, they also come with a little scraper.
Yep.
Which, awesome. I just keep that clean. Yeah. By the sink.
Yeah, so a bunch of people, when it's real hot, you'll like clean it. But on occasion, you do skunk the pan. Like I've skunked it. Like there's certain things that tend to
skunk. Just leaving the burn on there?
Like, you know, like when you cook sometimes and like you'll do a steak and everything's fine and the thing looks great, you can just like kind of like take a paper towel and just wipe it out and it looks golden. And then other times, like it sticks and just basically like fucks up the pan, where you got to like soak it, kind of scrub it down and like kind of do a little restoration on it. I don't know if that's ever happened to you.
No, I'm perfect every time.
You're extremely lucky.
That happens to me every time. Dude, I didn't know that was wrong.
No, that's called skunking the pan. So when you skunk the pan, it's when you leave like a bunch of bullshit, you overcook it, you don't do it right. Like you get to the point, well, but you have to like skunk the pan until it really gets seasoned. And the only way cast iron pans get seasoned is through a ton of use. Mm. That's why, I mean, it's obviously great to buy nice cast iron pans, but the best cast iron pans were like ones that we got from the secondhand store, or like if you were able to go to like an antique store and find like a really old, you know, cast iron pan that, you know, some grandma from like the early turn of the century had been using for 50 years, that's the one you want. Because you basically fry it up and it's perfect, because she spent years skunking the pan until she got it perfect.
Yeah, I believe Callie's got a bitchin' one. I believe that she found it at a secondhand store decades ago.
So I actually have a Dutch oven that I got from Butter Pad, and I seasoned that. And if something like pork or any lamb or anything that I have is going to really like kick up and like spit a lot, I'll put it in there. And that's actually turned out to be pretty good. And then I made like cornbread, and I've done some German pancakes, and I've done those in there. And that usually comes out pretty nice.
Yeah, cornbread staple, heated up a little bit. So some Tactical Calories fire salt and jalapenos. easy go-to. Yeah. Guilty pleasure, because you got that little pan. I don't want to cook cornbread in that big one.
Yeah, well, that's what that little pan is designed for. So I have like the big pan, and then I just got that little Dutch oven, and that thing cooks really well. But yeah, beef tallow or lard, don't fucking use seed oils. And I'm kind of amazed. Maybe he was fishing. That feels like an easy win with using the Google box. Do I have to use seed oil to season a pan? I mean, the internet would say, no, you don't.
I didn't even know that was a thing. Of course, I didn't know anything you just said either.
Well, cooking is obviously been like a huge part of my life. I mean, since I was a little kid, like my job was always like, I was my mom's sous chef. I did like cutting up all the vegetables and would make all the sides. And I've done that since I was Cashew's age, since I was 5 or 6. And I remember like standing on a stool, basically working that knife. And so much so that I think it's hilarious that I was actually trying to pull something out of my safe. And I pulled out the Bowie knife that my mother gave me when I was 6 years old for Christmas on my sixth. I was 6 years old Christmas. And I still have it. It's this bitchin' Bowie knife.
You got to put that on Instagram.
Yeah, it's cool as shit. And she got my initials engraved in it because I was always into knives and always cutting stuff. And she was like, well, you're 6 years old. I guess it's time for you to get your first Bowie knife. The blade is like 9 inches and it's a bone handle. It's pretty cool. It's a German steel Bowie knife. So I think since then I've always been a fan of Bowie knives. Hey, Power Athlete Nation. If you enjoyed this podcast and you're interested in supporting Power Athlete and getting involved with Power Athlete, myself and the crew here in Austin and in the global network, you can do it a few different ways. You can link on shop.powerathletehq.com. You can buy merch, you know, Be the Hammer, Move the Dirt, all the really amazing merchandise that we put together. And we're going to have a bunch of cool stuff coming up here at the end of the year for Black Friday. That's going to blow your mind. We also have the best training programs in the game. I think the most efficient, most powerful, well thought out, elegant programs that you will find. We're easy to get a hold of. Just go to powerathletehq.com, look for training. It's going to take you over to our best in class partner, Train Heroic, where you can look at Jack Street. If you're just trying to put on thick gobs of muscle and you want to get jacked as fuck, Jack Street's your program. We got Field Strong. Train like an athlete. Allow us to foster and develop athleticism. That's really our flagship program for trying to make athletes more athletic. We got Bedrock, that beginner program. We got Grindstone for those of you guys that are in the fight, need a flexible program that lives with you. If you're still into getting your face melted by the dirtiest, nastiest, saltiest wads on the planet, check out Johnny Wad. You're looking for a little bodybuilding, check out Johnny Bod. And if you're looking for a program, if you're in a situation where you go in harm's way, you're looking to kick in doors and take names and break hearts and all that good stuff, check us out at Hammer, the Holistic Athlete Movement Readiness Program that was developed with some of the baddest dudes on the planet. So you can check us out in the programs. If you are interested in getting involved in the Block One Network with Power Athlete, you can first check out academy.powerathletehq.com. You can check out our methodology. And if you want to go that Block One track, travel out here to Austin and prove that you are composed of the metal that we're looking for to be in our Block One Network. So we're easy to get a hold of. You can support us in any way. So if you are enjoying this podcast and really like this content, find a way to get involved. Giving you a couple different options. We're looking forward to seeing you. Thanks.
That's pretty awesome. And now you're in Texas and it's like, all right.
I guess you can just rock a Bowie knife. What I would really like to do is just get like a cool like 6-gun rig. Like just roll around like a pistol on your hip. Like not like the weird open carry guys, but like, you know.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Like I've seen the open carry stuff. It usually makes me a little nervous. But like one that was tastefully done.
Well, yeah. I mean, just like they did in the Wild West, you just gun is normal,
yeah,
on your hip.
Yeah, the problem is every time I've seen somebody open carry, it's usually something kind of ridiculous, like
obnoxious or ridiculous.
Obnoxious, ridiculous. Like I saw a dude like open carrying like a 44 mag with like a 12-inch long barrel. I mean, if somebody was going to attack that dude, he'd probably have to hit them with the gun before he could draw it.
Yeah, that's a long draw.
Yeah, it's super long draw. So, yeah, but the cast iron pans, don't cast them aside. Oh, look at that. Oh, was that that was a little pun. Ingo right now has peed himself a little bit.
Assuming he still listens to the podcast.
Yeah, he does. He worships the whole collection. Ingo has no other life other than Power Athlete Radio. And Adam Campbell. I mean, without Adam Campbell, there is no Ingo.
Let it go, man.
Yeah.
He's just a guy.
So for cast iron pans, you got two options. you either go out and you buy a pretty nice one. I mean, I've seen cheaper ones online and never had great experience with them. So it wasn't until, they have them all over Amazon. People make them. But I wanted cast iron pans that were kind of made with sand casting and kind of in a older process. And when I got the Cowboy Cauldron, they had a deal for the butter pad cast iron pans. And dude, at that point I was like, send me one. So, and I've been in love with it ever since and had a couple others. And now it's my go-to gift.
It is an excellent go-to gift.
You know what? If somebody gives you a gift and it's a nice cast iron pan, you're never upset about that gift. Maybe socks, booze. You're trying to tell me something. Cast iron pan. You're like, fuck, dude, I'm probably going to have this for a long time. My kids are probably going to have that. It's like the Sornex equipment. I joke, my kids' kids are going to lift on that shit, assuming they want to lift weights.
No, assuming they will.
Yeah.
Because that's all they'll know. Yeah. It'll be normal. I can't wait to just, yeah, that is normal for people. It's weird not to lift weights.
Yeah. So let's get into liver.
Quickly.
Were you cooking the liver in the cast iron pan? I hope not.
I didn't have it then.
Oh, God.
I was making too many mistakes. I was on a even worse. Here's what did me in.
Microwaving liver?
A Teflon plant pan.
Oh.
And I didn't know it was Teflon until, like, I did a steak on it and put the Teflon plant into the oven and had trusty oven mitts, which are no problem with proper cast iron. Grabbed the Teflon pan with the mitt, burned through my oven mitt, freaking got a little toasty on my hand. And then I'm like, what the fuck pan is this?
Oh, geez.
So immediately threw out that pan and then was gifted the cast iron here shortly thereafter. Serendipitous.
Yeah, the Teflon is pretty dicey. If you read some of the research, you're like, oh, God.
I'm destined for stomach cancer or lung cancer.
Was it from the smoking Teflon out of your oven?
No. From college, we used to have house parties in the basement. And then to sacrifice, we don't want police showing up. People were allowed to smoke in our basement. I didn't ever smoke a cigarette my entire life, except for in college. It's probably like freaking just consumed a lifetime worth of cigarettes a couple of years.
I haven't seen anybody smoke in a while. I've seen some people smoke some cigars. I feel weirder seeing people vape than smoke cigarettes. Like when I see people vape, I'm kind of like, ooh, it's weird.
Yeah. I have no opinion on that. It's frowned upon from my side of things. But the liver. So at HEB, which is local Texas supermarket.
The Heeb.
They offer Skylark calf liver.
Delicious.
16-ounce packs. So four individually wrapped pieces.
4 ounces.
4 ounces. Well, 16 divided by four?
Yeah.
Four ounces. So 16 ounces a week.
So you're doing, how many, were you eating it every day?
4 nights.
So 4 nights for dinner, you're having 4 ounces of liver. But that's all you were having? Were you having anything else?
No, but I was cooked on Teflon.
I think I want to throw up. That's a lot of liver.
Okay, but it was $4.50 for four meals.
Were you just cooking?
That's cheaper than banquet microwavable dinners, John.
Were you cooking just the liver? Were you doing liver and onions? Were you doing it?
Just the liver.
So what I do is I freeze the liver, and then I cut it up into frozen cubes. Like I cube it up into like probably half ounces, and then I eat like maybe 4, 5, 6 of those cubes like maybe once a month.
Yeah.
Which is more than enough.
A good strategy. I'm still coming down from my A's, so I don't need that.
So my mom always told us liver and onions is good about once a month. Just long enough for you to forget what it smells like cooking it, for you to cook it again.
I eat for performance, not taste.
Ah.
And then I also tried like calf liver chili just to cook it down or like just choke it down. Mm-hmm. But then realized I'm ruining chili.
Yeah.
And it lasts longer. So I'm just going to just suffer.
I think the most tasteless way is to freeze it and then cube it. Like it doesn't taste like anything.
Yeah. Also heart, you can do that with.
We've talked about, man, I make those heart tacos and I cook them for like 2 days in the crock pot and it cooks down. And what's cool about heart is it gets like it's smooth muscle, but you can cut it into these strips. And man, we made heart tacos and I am still to this day a big fan of it. Dude, when that massive buffalo heart showed up, I mean, the thing was like 12 pounds. I actually had to cut it in half and cook it in 2 batches. And the kids are like, this is delicious. And my wife's like, don't tell them. I'm like, it's heart. It's buffalo heart. And then I showed them a picture and they were like, oh God. after they were done.
Again?
No, I'll let him sneak up on it again. Maybe Stay Classy will sell me another Buffalo Heart.
Maybe.
So, liver, 2 to 3, maybe 4 ounces once a month. Don't eat it 4 times a week. And if you're going to season a pan, lard or beef tallow is pretty good. And once you get that pan seasoned up, if you want to do a really cool thing, do French fries or potato fries, yuca fries, or sweet potato fries, and use duck fat. So you can go and buy duck fat at Whole Foods. It's in a jar, and I was basically pan frying up yuca and sweet potatoes in duck fat. And the whole reason I thought about it was, you remember in John Wick when he comes in to kill John Wick 2? When he comes in to kill the dude and the guy's like, duck fat, it makes all the difference right before he gets shot in the face. Vaguely. John Wick 2. I can't remember the name of the Italian dude who basically gets John Wick to kill his sister so he can take control of the table.
Yeah, I saw it once. I need to see it again.
Well, in there, he talks about duck fat. And duck fat's pretty good. So if you want to fry something up and you want some bitchin' yuca fries or some great sweet potato fries, duck fat is the way to go.
We got time for one more?
Yeah, let's do one more.
Speaking of fat.
Let's do it.
See that transition?
I like it.
It's getting better.
Here's, can argue. Yeah.
All right, question here.
Okay.
Text message versus our voicemail.
All right, read it out.
Winter is coming, which means heavy sweaters and bulking season. I'm trying to optimize the amount of muscle gained without the worry of taking my shirt off. What percentage body fat should I aim for to build the most amount of muscle over the next 3 months? Is this a green light to go to town on Oreos and Ho-Hos, or stay relatively dialed in with an eggnog here or there?
So what is the ideal body fat for gaining muscle? That's a really interesting question.
And then gives a time frame, assuming that they're going to lean for
spring, summer. I'm not a fan of this whole like bulking and leaning thing. I think it's something that like internet has folklored in this idea of like bulking and leaning. I think you should always try to be able to carry the most amount of muscle with the least amount of body fat, just in the sake of metabolic flexibility. And we can always link up my talk that I did for the NSCA or cut some of that in on the metabolic flexibility talk. But what's pretty interesting, and in that talk I reference and talk about how oxidative fat is. So what's pretty fascinating, if you look at like, if you want to have a healthy androgen profile, it begs the question, like, what is an ideal body fat? And I think the least amount that you can carry, it being oxidative. So what's fascinating, and you need a healthy androgen profile, and fat definitely affects having a healthy androgen profile. So you got to remember 50% of testosterone in adult males is bound up by albumin, which is the protein made in your liver. 44% is bound to sex hormone binding globulin, which is also produced in the liver. And about 2 to 3% stays free form. And that free testosterone is really what we're kind of trying to protect. The higher your sex hormone binding globulin is, the least amount of free testosterone you have available for trying to put on muscle and, you know, having a healthy androgen profile.
May I pause you for one moment? Can you explain what is an androgen profile, and then how do people get it? Where is it lined up on their blood work, or ask the doc?
Yeah. So when you, these are all your sex hormones. This would be like free testosterone, total testosterone, sex hormone binding globulin, estradiol, estrogen. These would be all of what would be characterized as your sex hormones. Things that we could take a look. Like I had a guy hit me up on Facebook telling me he had a low sperm count. My first question is, do you have a low sperm count or do you just have weak swimmers? Because there's a lot of times where some people just have lazy swimmers and they're very inactive. Other times the sperm count is super low. So why is it low? And just asking me, hey, what supplements can I take to raise my sperm count? I mean, fuck, Google the internet. You will have an endless amount of different remedies and everything from like rhino horn from Africa that the Chinese believe helps with virility and sperm count. I mean, there's so much BS in there. But at the end of the day, as a healthy male, you should have a good sperm count, but that's going to be dictated upon having a healthy androgen profile. So if you want to go see your doctor, this would be what would be characterized as like, what my sex hormones, what does that androgen profile look like? You know, depending on the test, you're going to see a range in testosterone. You would like to be in the upper part of the range, which if you're, you know, looking at like a Vibrant America or LabCorp or, you know, something like that, would probably be anywhere from like a 250 to, you know, 1250 kind of a range. What's wild though, we were recently looking at some blood work and some of the guys had good total testosterone, but that's not what's really important. How much is bioavailable? Like we said, 44 gets bound up by the protein made in the liver. The other part gets bound up with the sex hormone binding globulin, and we're really looking for that free form. And these guys had sex hormone binding globulin that was through the roof. Now, what's pretty interesting, and this could be from oxidative stress, this could be from the environment, leaching plastics, whatever you want to call it, but you know, our grandfathers, and somebody could make a really good case that we are not nearly as robust as our grandparents, that every generation is less robust, both genetically, both physically. So our grandfathers probably had a sex hormone binding globulin of maybe like 7 to 10. Now their range is in the 40s, and we see people pretty regularly in the 70s. Now what's cool, or what's interesting, because we found a new pattern, the guys that we were recently looking at blood work on, theirs was high, but yet their estradiol was super low. So normally when estradiol is high, we'll see it high. So it's pretty interesting. And when estradiol is low, now you have to start looking at environmental factors. You know, is it lead poisoning? Is it environmental? Like what's causing this? Leaching plastic. You know, if we go back to John Sapolsky's podcast, or the one we did, podcast we did with John Sapolsky, talking about leaching plastic, you know, being a huge determining factor for this stuff. So, you know, it's been pretty well established through the studies that obesity has an impact on the hypothalamus pituitary testicular axis. So what's known as the HPT axis, which if you were to just kind of imagine two points, right, is kind of balanced. So when an individual, let's give you an example, when an individual were to inject exogenous testosterone, like you were to go on testosterone replacement, that axis would get skewed because the body cannot make differentiate between like exogenous and endogenous. It just knows it has too much testosterone. So what happens is the body, realizing you have too much, starts putting the governor on, and now all of a sudden it signals for the testes to not produce as much testosterone. So it does it by like reducing luteinizing hormone and some other factors. So what happens also, and this would happen for somebody that were going hormone replacement. So you hear guys take steroids, they inject a bunch of exogenous testosterone. Now all of a sudden their nuts start to shrink and shrivel up because the body is sending a signal to shut the testes down. Now for men, most of the testosterone is made in the testes. A small percentage, like less than 10%, is made in the adrenals. For women, it's purely in the adrenals, so obviously it wouldn't affect women the same way. They would have a whole bunch of other issues if they were to inject exogenous testosterone. But it starts skewing that axis, and now we have the body dropping luteinizing hormone, and we have a bunch of other issues. Now, if you're not trying to have kids, you know, like you get to the point, you're, you know, in your 40s, you've already had a, you know, vasectomy or whatever, and you've decided like, hey, I'm not going to have any more kids, and you want to go in some form of hormone replacement, not necessarily a big idea as long as some of the other values are in check, like estrogen's not too high, and, you know, you're not super physiological with testosterone in the 2,000s and 3,000s. Also controlling DHT. DHT is also directly related to enlarging the prostate and also hair loss, which, you know, as men age, one thing you don't want to do would be as bald, and you don't want to have a huge fucking prostate, because when that prostate swells, now all of a sudden that pushes on your bladder, and then you know, it's like old men that have to get up and pee 50 times in a night.
Yeah, like Morty. Jerry Stiller in Zoolander.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, he's like, give me a little pee-pee. That's exactly what happened. Swollen prostate. So you have the sensation that you got to go pee, but you really don't have to. It's fucking terrible. So definitely get that the PSA numbers, which are the numbers for the for prostate health. That's really an important part of that that whole deal. But studies have shown, like I'll say, studies have shown that circulating androgens are negatively associated with too much abdominal fat for men. And this is an interesting connection between low androgens and metabolic syndrome and the lack of metabolic flexibility. So
go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Also, leptin, which is a hormone that's produced that's related to insulin, right? So that's produced in an adipose tissue, and that influences functions of the testes both directly and indirectly. So there's a couple things that are going on here.
A lot of things.
Yeah. So the idea of like, what's the ideal body fat to be able to put on muscle? Enough body fat where you can handle the load. You know, you feel like you can train at a high level. You know, I mean, we have Jay Cutler coming on the podcast, and he'll talk about, you know, the dark days and when he was in bodybuilding trying to, you know, carry 260, 270 pounds of body weight at 3% body fat. It's fucking awful. In the off season, he was probably anywhere from 14, 18, 20% body fat because he could train with a ton of intensity. He could handle a ton of poundages. And he knew that, you know, when he turned on his diet 20 weeks later, he could go from, you know, 300 plus pounds down to 250 pounds and not lose an ounce of fat. The idea of what is the ideal body fat for gaining muscle, I would say the leanest that you can be with the while carrying the most amount of muscle will guarantee that you are the most metabolically flexible version of yourself and will protect that androgen profile. So I don't know what that is, but I definitely know that if you're thinking like, hey, I'm going to bulk and be 30%, don't fucking do it. 20%, now we start getting into a little bit of troubles. I think anywhere from like 14 to 18% would be about as much body fat as you had. Like, let's say you were 10%, you wanted to do a bulk. I think what I would do is I'd start trying to put on some weight, put on some mass. And when all of a sudden I was, you know, had put on some muscle and I got to 14, 15 and that body fat started climbing, I would probably stop it there. I wouldn't stop it at 20, just because I believe that that will have a negative impact on your androgen profile and your ability to put on muscle and strength and train at a high level.
Mm-hmm. Also curious how he's checking said body fat percentage. He himself doing the calipers?
No, he's probably just looking in the mirror, being like, I look good. You know, that doesn't fucking work. But if you're really serious about it, go out, get a, you know, caliper test on, you know, go and get a DEXA scan, bod pod. Not that, you know, any one is more accurate than the other, but it's a great measure and a starting place where if you go do it a second time for a test and a retest, now you can see actually like, hey, this one had me at 10, this one had me 11, this one had me at 13. Now all of a sudden I've gained weight. Now how much body fat have I put on? The research is just very, very definite that fat is extremely oxidative and can really fuck a lot of things up, especially when you put it on rapidly, especially around the midsection, you know, in that intra-abdominal area. So just be very, very cognizant if you're putting on a ton of fat kind of in that spare tire area and also carrying a lot of fat in the butt and the thighs.
Would you recommend maybe a coach to help guide?
I would definitely recommend a nutrition coach, kind of like we have with our nutrition ninjas with Sam and Rob, to kind of guide them on this. I believe that when you're in the middle of it doing it yourself, and I heard a bodybuilder make a pretty good comment. They were asking him like why he bombed out of this show and he was supposed to win, and he made a bad point where he said, you know, I lost faith in my coach and I decided to take the controls about 6 or 8 weeks before the show, and it's impossible to land the plane by yourself. And he fucked up. And he's like, I just, you know, lost faith in my coach. Things weren't going well. I blamed him. I should have been blaming myself. I took control and said, fuck it, I'll do it myself. And he's like, and I couldn't land the plane. So I think sometimes you need an objective individual standing off to the sideline, giving you good information, guiding you on this, that's not inside of your own head, that has the ability to push outside and say, hey, you know what? I think this is good. You know, the other issue, and we run into this all too often, is getting blood work's expensive. True, but I would rather spend a few bucks, have insurance, and get my blood work done so that nothing jumps out and scares me. You know, I've talked
like
about
vitamin A toxicity.
Yeah. Like, hey, I listened to this Rhonda Patrick podcast on Joe Rogan. She talked about how great liver is. I'm going to go eat liver, and little did I know that I'm basically hacking my Krebs cycle and I'm going to get vitamin A toxicity, which I'm almost waiting for somebody to actually discuss that one and being like, you know, what happens when you do too much? And she never has discussed that. And Rhonda Patrick's made a lot of claims with that, but she's never actually said, hey, you know what? We've had somebody that got into vitamin A toxicity, which you don't want to have. If you want to pull up the symptoms and see how that goes, don't fucking do it.
Yeah.
But when we got Chris's done, they did, his Krebs cycle.
Uh-huh.
And it was like... You know, half of it was cut off, and they were like, but you're in a highly ketogenic state. Your body's producing ketones, but you're eating like 300 to 400 grams of carbohydrates a day. It was bypassing, and dude, you were running into some issues.
Found myself in Arizona all by chance. And it was like, yeah,
I'll get some blood work done.
I'll hang out with Dr. Tom.
You get insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I know. We have good health insurance.
So it was just, they asked, and I'm like, sure.
Yeah, fuck it.
Why not?
Let's get it done.
And then it turned out to be an issue.
Yeah, the, you know, my advice to people is, and we should link up my talk on metabolic flexibility, but that idea of if you want to be the most metabolically flexible version of yourself and you want to be the best version of yourself, try to carry the most amount of muscle with the least amount of body fat without doing something fucking insane. Like, I'm going to, you know, like the bodybuilders trying to get in shape for the shows. You know, those guys after the show have a ton of metabolic rebound and some really, you know, normal hormonal issues because they're pretty much putting their body in a state of like close to death.
You know, that's what I guess I didn't even think to ask Cutler. Like, talk to us. Like, we've seen the epic stage performance put on. What's the next 3 months like?
You just
eat normal?
So what's wild is there used to be like the kind of the idea of like, hey, like the feast and the famine, I've dieted, and then those guys go out and they fucking just eat everything and can't control themselves. The problem is that once you've starved yourself and done that, when they go put on that weight, it's next to impossible to like get it off the second time. And your body only has so many of those
yo-yo.
Yeah. Like your body, like that happens all the time. You'll run into people like, oh, I lost X amount of weight and I had this huge swing and then I gained it all back. Your body will only allow you to do that a few times before it really starts kind of putting some governors on you. So I think the bodybuilders that are really successful are probably guys like a Cutler where he diets down, he does everything. And then he kind of does a little bit of, you know, I think it's Lane Norton's reverse diets deal where they slowly start adding calories back in and they kind of, you know, go through this process to hopefully safely get back to like a fairly decent amount of calories so that they don't get into this like binge idea where now all of a sudden they've eaten everything. They put on a bunch of weight gain. They fucking fuck up the metabolism. Everything kind of runs. So I think to have longevity, and we didn't get into this and I'm sad we didn't, but seeing a guy like Jay who's had so much longevity, you know, the fact that he wins his first Olympia at 33, still competes at 40, he probably had a very, very specific approach that he had. And we should ask him just on an email and be like, hey,
next time.
Yeah. We'll get him on again and discuss like, hey, the day after the show, I mean, he made a good point, I think, where he was talking about, you know, everybody wants cheat meals. I just wanted water because he had dehydrated himself so much. So maybe he was switched on enough to be like, hey, here was my plan going in. Here's my plan for the time I step off. This is exactly what it looks like. And this is the game plan. Cause he doesn't seem like the type of dude to deviate off of the plan.
No.
Like, this is the plan. I'm going all in on the plan, and there is no fucking plan B. And that's why I appreciated having that dude on and why I liked rapping with him. But at the end of the day, just know that excess body fat fucks up your androgen profile and can negatively affect your ability to gain muscle because it's going to skew a few different factors.
Asked and answered.
Cool.
Double time.
All right. So we got cast iron.
Mm-hmm.
You be an adult. Go back in time, 1,000 years, use beef tallow, lard, something that's more animal-based. Don't eat 16 ounces of liver a week, once a month, 3 to 4 ounces. And if you want to get put on muscle, control your body fat. Don't eat like a pig. Don't eat like an asshole. So thanks for tuning in to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. Bye.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.